ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujak, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
This month, we celebrate the 50th anniversary of one of history's greatest moments, the first time that man stepped foot on the moon. It happened on July 20th, 1969, when U.S. astronaut Neil Armstrong, part of the Apollo 11 crew, took the first moonwalk ever. On this edition of UWM Today, we look back at that day a half century ago when the world heard the words, "The Eagle has landed." Joining us in the studio is Jean Creighton. Jean is an astrophysicist at UW-Milwaukee. She runs the Manfred Olson Planetarium on campus. We're going to talk about what the moon landing has meant for all of us and also get details on a special celebration the planetarium is holding on July 20th to commemorate this incredible event. Welcome, Jean. Good to have you with us in the studio today.
Great to be here.
And listeners to Lake Effect are familiar with Jean's voice. She's a regular. Bonnie North interviews her regularly. But today we have you for a whole half hour, not just for a short segment. So it's great to have you in the studio. Jean, I still get shivers when I hear Neil Armstrong's voice replayed saying, "That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." Truly, truly incredible, isn't it?
It is. For me, though, to be honest, the moment where I really feel my heart going poo, 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 is when all the subsystems give the go. Go, calm, go, did it, go, go. And you know that's thousands of people who have checked thousands of things, and it's culminated to this critical moment. If it's all go, any one of those could stop the party. It's all a go, and they land. I think that is the breathtaking moment for me.
Well, seeing how often things go wrong in this world, to imagine that there was really zero room for error here, right? I mean, if something did go wrong as this Saturn V was lifting off, or as the first stage separated from the second, and so on, history would have been written very differently.
And as they say, space is hard. So there are many things that have to work exactly right for the whole thing to come together. So to me, that is the magnificent moment of all these people. 600,000 people were working on the Apollo program.
Yes. Do you remember 50 years ago?
I do not.
So you were too little, or
too little.
Or not with us yet.
Too little.
So I did. I remembered it. I was around, and I remember being riveted to the television set as we saw these incredible pictures coming back. And I remember sitting there with my family saying, this is unbelievable. I this will be with me for the rest of my life. And to this day, as I see those images replayed, especially during this anniversary year, hear some of the stories retold, I go back to my youth and I'm sitting in my living room saying, can this be real?
Right. You are with many people. I feel like there's a divide. The people who remember it, who saw it, and the people like me who've only heard of it. And I envy you a little bit that you got to experience that firsthand. I'm hoping that in my lifetime we do it again so that I have the experience, this is what it was like when we landed on the moon.
Well, the world is constantly changing, as we know, and who could have imagined 50 years ago that as mankind begins to get ready to go back to the moon, it would be Amazon funding this rather than our governments. Jeff Bezos, of course, with the SpaceX program, has said that it is his hope to see us return to the moon sometime in this next decade. It's 2019. He's saying sometime in the mid-2020s, perhaps.
We'll see. I wouldn't hold my breath. I think NASA is probably, or a combination of both, is probably the most likely scenario for success.
So what has as we look back at the moon landing, what difference has it made in our lives? You know, we're a half century down, and certainly I've got these riveting memories, but the world around us has also changed, not just just our own memories or recollections.
It certainly has. So I think the main thing that Apollo, and believe me, I had to think a lot about what I would say is the main thing, but I think the main thing of the Apollo missions was that it forced us to miniaturization. Because the payload that we could carry with these rockets was very limited, and the power that we had for the payload was very limited, it meant that we had to think about how to take these computers that, and you remember this, right? Computers that filled rooms and took enough energy to power a small city, how are you going to do that in the volume of a shoebox that with enough power to power, you know, a coffee maker, right? So these are the challenges that they had. And at the time, they must have seemed so outlandish, so crazy. And yet, slowly, methodically, with real breakthroughs, technological breakthroughs like the integrated circuit, we went from these huge computers to things that nowadays fit in your pocket. The phone that you have in your pocket, Tom, could power 120 million computers that landed a person on the moon.
Unbelievable.
It has changed our life. So not only the small nanotechnology that we use that think about what your phone does for you, and it's hard to even imagine your life without it, but consider also that we send thousands of satellites going around the Earth. They tell us the weather. They help our communication. They help us understand our planet as a world that we share. Apollo 8 is considered to be the beginning, the Earth shot picture that we took.
The beautiful.
The moon shot, yeah.
Right, the beautiful.
The Earthrise.
Right, right.
That we saw.
First time we saw Earth in a way never seen before, this beautiful blue, yellowish green globe floating in the vastness and darkness of space.
That's right. Without any borders, without any, you know, boundaries, we realize this is a place that we share and it's precious. The environmental movement is supposedly started with that 1968 picture of Earthrise.
I had it hanging in my dorm room years ago, just looking at it thinking, good Lord, that's us. We're in there somewhere.
That's right. So we were able, now we're able with satellites to look at the Earth and see changes. See, for example, what is good forestry. We see where fires are worse and better. When is the appropriate moment to put on this crop this medication to help it survive the drought or whatever it is that it's facing. So these are things that we take for granted, we don't consider, and yet that is because we can trivially now send satellites into orbit. I would add, though, some poetry to all this, this practical thing, the practical things that we discussed. The moment that you put an ambitious goal in front of people, there's something specific to shoot for. You have to overcome these real challenges, and people are motivated. You had a whole generation of people who considered STEM careers because of the Apollo program. And I know for a fact that there's a whole nother set of people who are motivated to getting a person on Mars, which will be our big challenge. It's as difficult in 2019 to get a person to Mars as it is a person to the moon in the 60s.
And perhaps as inconceivable as it was 50 years ago to some folks.
That's right.
Could ever leave Earth and reach the moon.
So I'm excited about the possibilities that those problems, that problem solving will give us for life on Earth in 50 years.
You know, one other thing that occurs to me as we talk about the meaning of the moon landing is the politics that got us there. The Smithsonian Magazine this past month did a wonderful essay on what governmental, what political, what human forces were behind the movement to put the science into motion to get us, the science and engineering that ultimately got us off to the moon landing. And there were some wonderful anecdotes taken from our archives from the Kennedy Library, in which they talked about, of course, the moon race between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, Russia at the time. It was Soviet Union, mm-hmm. right? It's mm-hmm. Russia today.
Yeah.
the fact that one of the reasons we went to the moon was a game of one-upsmanship politically. John Kennedy said, we are not going to be beat by the Soviets. We are going to get there first. And according to some of the transcribed documents that the Smithsonian came up with, at one point, Kennedy said, you know, I'm really not that interested in the moon to begin with. I just want to beat the Soviets here. I want to get them there. So there were a lot of factors that had nothing to do with science, nothing to do with engineering, but ultimately were critical for us to have made the leap off of this planet.
It's true. I like to think that today we understand better the value of collaboration, international collaboration, and I think that a big project like going to Mars would demand it because there'd be nobody who would be able to pay all the bills on their own. But it's true, at that time, the political will was partially funded by a real, antagonistic relationship. And
who was going to win, right?
Right. And frankly, up till then, the Soviet Union was getting all the firsts. There was a woman in space, a Soviet woman, before there was any man, American. So there certainly was some catching up to do. And there's some really beautiful description in a book called Rocket Men, who talks about Apollo 8. And I think certainly younger people probably have never heard of Apollo 8, but this was the mission that proved so much of the technology, and they were able to try the systems that Apollo 11 would depend on. And of the three crew, one of them was what we would consider today the true scientist who was motivated. He really wanted to know more about the moon. The second one was a little bit, you know, on the fence. And the military man was it was just about, let's beat the Ruskies. That's all it was about. So to me, that, you know, in hindsight, with the 50 years that's passed, that seems a little odd. But that was the time.
It is sort of strange when you think about it that that we were competing, essentially mankind competing against mankind, when in fact, considering the vastness of space, we're so tiny. We're so insignificant in terms of size compared to the universe. Why can't we work together, right?
I mean,
weren't there some lessons that also came from the race to the moon that ultimately led to success with us working with the Russians and Chinese and the Japanese and
the
Europeans?
That's one of the beauties, say, for example, of the International Space Station. This demands the collaboration. And you see people have to work together for success from the launch all the way to staying in space for months at a time. They develop very close relationships, and I guess the astronauts need to learn some Russian to get on. So, because the only place right now that a person can leave the Earth is in Kazakhstan.
Yes, isn't that amazing?
You know,
the U.S. has not launched a manned mission to space, since 2000, is it 11? It's been many, many years since shuttle stopped flying. I think it was 2011.
Yeah.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujak, and joining us in the studio today is Jean Creighton. Jean is an astrophysicist at UWM. She's also director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium, which attracts many, many young people, old people.
15,000 people a year.
Big people. Yeah, it's amazing, amazing program of folks from throughout the community who could come in and dream of what it must be like to be out there in space. We're talking today not only about some of the great work that Jean does in the planetarium, but also the celebration of the 50th anniversary of man's landing on the moon with Apollo 11, July 20th. So that's coming up right around the corner here.
That's right.
So as you, Jean, think about space, and as an astrophysicist, you think about that a lot. Do you see the opportunity for us to profit from this great event 50 years ago to someday doing deep space exploration? You said earlier in the program, space is hard. What have we learned that should encourage us that we can go beyond the moon?
What we've learned is that if we put our mind to something, if we break a big task into smaller tasks, we can do it. And the idea that we could get a person on Mars, I think, is a fantastic idea, because we would have to solve issues that we face on Earth, like, what are you going to do with your garbage, right? If we manage, if we find a smart way to deal with refuse in space, then we might be able to take that lesson on Earth, which we need. When I've been thinking about the moon landing for, I'll get back to that, because I've been thinking about the moon landing for over a year now, probably two, this anniversary coming up. And it occurred to me that I don't want this just to be nostalgia. I want this to be a celebration, which is why we came up with the name Lunar Party. And I wanted everyone there, whether they had seen the moon or not, to celebrate that adventurous spirit that got us to the moon, and the idea that we're interested in the cosmos and we want to learn more about it and we want to see it firsthand is something that we should be proud of and happy for. So,
well, let's talk about that celebration.
Sure.
It's July 20th, Saturday, July 20th, on the UWM campus at the planetarium. You've got activities planned through much of the day. Tell us what our listeners can do if they want to come and be with kindred souls celebrating celebrating the moon landing.
Yeah, so the event is from 12 to 3, and we thought, given the time, it should have multiple facets. So it should obviously have music. So we're going to have a DJ who's been instructed, please play music from all these decades to serve everyone there. Some fun for the kids, but also some grown-ups. There's a bounce house that's rocket-themed. We will have food. If people can bring a picnic, of course, but maybe they'd like to get some Purple Door ice cream. They're making a specific ice cream called Purple Moon, which should be fun. And food trucks, in case you didn't manage to pack your picnic. You can see the moon, you can feel the moon. So we're going to have beautiful pictures from the library. One from the late 1800s, but also a 3D map that you can touch so you can feel the moon as well. We have a virtual reality set up that if you wanted to feel what it would look like, feel like standing on the moon, we'll be able to provide that for you. Now, what about curiosity? What about learning more from the experts? We'll have a mechanical engineer, Nathan Solowitz, is going to tell us about some of the nitty-gritty for those of us who would like to hear more for 20 minutes or so. And we'll have Janice Ells, who can tell us about what we're learning from the medical community. So we've learned from space that, I'll give you an example specifically. We find that if you get a little nick scratch in space, it doesn't heal. And they found that the people who were working with hands under the lamps to play with the plants actually do have their scratches heal. And what we found is that infrared light accelerates the healing process and helps solve some of the problems with the eyes that astronauts have. So this is a case where technology has gone from Earth to help space and then from space back to Earth. So some of the diseases of the eye have found very promising results from these LEDs.
So July 20th, lots of opportunities to connect with that moment in history with some real tangible hands-on activities.
And I'll add some stargazing, too. The planetarium will be open for short programs. This is all free and open to the public, so you can get every little bit that you might want, from food, fun, music, some stars, some space experts as well.
Well, certainly true believers will be there, but I do have to bring up, you still, there's this conspiracy theory floating around that some still believe that we could never have really gone to the moon. Do you ever run into that when people come into the planetarium and you do a program? Does anybody ever say, come on, Gene, you know, is this for real or is that just at the fringe and nobody voices those doubts about whether or not the moon landing really happened?
They usually phrase it actually as you did. Some other people don't believe. What do you say?
I've got a friend.
yeah, that's right. And really, I think it comes
down— Where does
down,
that come from? You know,
I don't know. I mean, I think the point is, I don't think it's easy to convince in logical, detailed arguments whether we've gone to the moon or not. Here's what is easy. They can pick up their phone, and they know they can dial some numbers, and they can call somebody anywhere in the world. To me, if that's not compelling enough to understand that we have satellites in space that talk to connect your phone with a phone halfway across the world, then there's probably nothing else I can say that would make any difference.
You're probably right. I sort of sidetrack us, but I just am still blown away that there are these small numbers of people who are doubters. I would send all of them, by the way, to the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., where you could spend a day walking through and literally looking at and even touching the rockets and the capsules that have traveled. You know, just that it is truly a remarkable way to experience the moon landing. So let's talk about students. You teach classes at UWM. You see a new generation of perhaps star explorers there. What do you see in today's student in terms of their enthusiasm or their desire to go ahead and be part of this continued mission to reach for the sky?
Technology motivates a lot of the students. It motivates them to figure out, again, some of the problems. I had a young man approach me a few weeks ago saying, okay, I want to be part of this. How do I do that? And I connected him with some faculty members. Those specific problems that I mentioned lead to wonderful things. For example, one of the problems that we're going to have to solve if we're going to send a person to Mars is we're going to need to know how to fix a spacecraft that's been hit by a micrometeorite. If you spend enough time in space, inevitably something is going to hit it, right? So we're developing metals that can identify a hole and fix it. Self-healing metals. You might have known about this. I certainly didn't. And I thought, really, that's possible? So the kinds of things that we're developing sound to me a little bit like science fiction. So if I was starting my career now, I think I would like to be part of those systems that have so much promise for us.
Also, you mentioned the healing powers that come with light in space, one of the discoveries
sure.
that came across. I suspect that there will have to be other advances in terms of making sure the human body can survive years, perhaps, of weightlessness, right? I mean, there still are some questions of what impact being in space has on our molecules.
Right. Well, I think the principal problems are the bones. This is a well-known fact that your bones atrophy and you lose a lot of calcium. So they're fanatic about doing exercises just to maintain as much muscle mass and bone mass as possible. One of the things that we're becoming more aware now is eye problems, because our whole bodies are so tuned into gravity, fluids normally go towards your feet, but if that's not possible, then it starts accumulating in your head and it starts pushing your eyes from behind. It is not a good situation. These are problems that we would definitely need to address in one way or another. The other thing that I guess we're understanding more about now is the group dynamic. If you leave four people or five or however many in a very small space for long periods of time, then they start behaving a little strangely. And we don't understand the details of that yet because it's not possible to do the experiment for real at this point. All we do is we isolate four people in small volume and then they become reserved and they isolated, they sometimes just don't want to work with the group. So the
but even
group,
that's a little unrealistic because they could always get out, right?
It's not of course.
Like, it's not like you're a million miles away.
That's right. So you can't reproduce the, not to mention that you're not weightless. I mean, there's so many other things that you're not experiencing at the same time. As a package, it becomes difficult. And I think at this point, we're not even sure whether it's possible.
Do you think 50 years from now, when we celebrate the 100th anniversary of man landing on the moon, that there will still be this same sense of awe and wonder at what happened in 1969?
Oh, for sure. Because regardless of where we are in 50 years, this was either going to be, wow, the beginning of a brand new age, or, wow, this was the first step that exploded into this new reality that 1969 seems so quaint and so small.
And small we are, aren't we? Consider, again, the vastness of space. How far do you think we can go? We're talking about Mars. Is it realistic to think that man can travel beyond the solar system?
Not in our lifetime, Tom. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. What I do think is possible, and people are talking about it, is sending spacecraft the size of a stamp. The expectation is that we would need about 20 years to develop a laser system that could power these little spacecraft. It's certainly possible to make spacecraft that have everything they need on them on that size. And then we would get them to about 20% the speed of light and buzz them to the nearest planet in the Alpha Centauri system. That's a whole scale of 40 years. I might be alive in 40 years. But that's no people. That's just talking about a multiple hundreds of spacecraft that we would send. To me, that would be significant an achievement. And we can wait for people for maybe the next generation, the next 100 years.
Well, let's do a show when we get those little spacecraft launched and off.
Oh, I hope we have much more to celebrate before then.
I do too. Jean, thank you so much. Great to have you on today's program.
Thank you so much.
And happy anniversary to Apollo 11 landing on the moon.
Wonderful.
Jean Creighton, director of UWM's Manfred Olson Planetarium, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.